Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, beloved children's book authors Andrea Beede and Betsy Bird chat about Beede's career, her writing process, the publishing industry, and how much fun it is to write for kids. This conversation originally took place May 15th, 2022 at the American Writers Museum and was recorded live as part of the museum's inaugural American Writers Festival. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Welcome to this program of the American Writers Festival. My name is Courtney Borjas, and I am a program coordinator here at the American Writers Museum. I'm here to introduce you today for our guests for our next event. In Andrea Beede's books, children see themselves as illustrators, inventors, architects, and engineers. They see themselves as creative, brave, funny, and successful at what they set out to do. She's here to talk with us today about her latest books, I Love You Like Yellow and Aaron Slater Illustrator. Andrea Beede is the author of many beloved children's books, including the best-selling Questionnaire series, Attack of the Fluffy Bunnies, Happy Birthday, Madame Chapeau, and One Girl. She lives just outside of Chicago. She's here to talk about her work with Betsy Bird, author, podcaster, and book blogger, who is also the collection development manager of Evanston Public Library and the former youth materials specialist of New York Public Library. Join me in welcoming today Andrea and Betsy.
Woohoo! Thank you.
Yay! All right. So, Andrea, it's so good to see you.
It is good to see you.
Don't you like how we color coordinated?
Yes, we
didn't. Completely
send...
accidentally. We did not mean to.
We should have sent the memo out, and y'all could have worn your polka dots, too.
What are you wearing? Because I'm going to wear my black dress with white spots. This is very exciting. So, I have so many questions for you today.
We have answers. Let's see if they match.
Exactly. So, first and foremost, there's many, many different directions we could go with this conversation. And one thing I'd like to really kind of center on is your popularity.
Oh.
Yes, that thing. I don't know if you've noticed, but your books have taken America by storm. And I would like to find out, how did this happen?
How?
Because you were a really good picture book creator. There are many very good picture book creators. And then you sort of got like zoomed up to the stratosphere with your book. So can you tell us, how did this happen? How did it happen?
Well, thank you. Quite by surprise, I think, is the answer. So I don't know if your experience has been, Betsy also writes marvelous books, picture books and novels and things. Novels?
Yeah, my first. Yeah. I have my first novel.
It is, yes.
It's out there.
Yes, it is, and it's beautiful. So when my first couple of books came out, I just knew that the second they came out, the world was just going to stop. It was going to be like, something amazing has just happened. What could it be? Oh, it's Andrea Beede's book. Yeah, that's not what happened. Instead, it was just crickets. Barely crickets. The crickets were like, yeah, we can't be bothered. It was nothing, you know? Yeah. And that was fine. But it sort of is not the experience you fantasize about.
Oh,
of
absolutely
course.
Not. You're like,
But when Iggy Pet came out, Iggy was this quirky, weird book.
And this was Iggy Peck Architect.
Iggy Peck Architect, yeah. Came out, illustrated by David Roberts, who's a brilliant genius, amazing guy. And the book came out, and it just was this little quiet thing that happened that people, independent booksellers, librarians, bloggers, yay bloggers, started just telling other people about the book, and over every quarter it just holds a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, and the publisher was finally like, hey, why don't you write another book about Iggy? And I thought, I heard what Iggy builds a house, Iggy builds a car, Iggy builds a what is the, and I thought,
what else rhymes with architect?
What rhymes with knock your water off a tect? And I just couldn't, it didn't intrigue me, so I didn't do it. So I ended up looking in the books and looking at David's art, and he has these beautiful children in the illustrations, and wanted to kind of start exploring who they were.
Oh.
So looking
Now that's an interesting sort of level of collaboration where
it is.
You write the book, the illustrator who you have had no contact with, you've not said a word to him when he's making the art, he makes all these interesting children, and then you get to look at the children and go, that one.
Who is this
Who's
one?
Who's that one?
Yeah, and it's so cool because when David illustrates these kids, And all the only clue that there were other children was that 17 smiling young faces from the text of Iggy
Peck. Could have been cats, for all we know.
Could have been. And he could have done cats, and I'd been like, those are the best cats ever. It's all good.
He does do a good cat.
He does do a good cat. But I looked at all of the illustrations. So when David does a character, he likes to say there are no extras in the books.
Oh, nice.
They all have personalities, and they're all very complete and real people to him, even if they show up on one page. They have like this backstory. They have all of these things going, but he doesn't tell me any of that stuff. So I get to look at the pictures and go, oh, who's that girl who's sitting there with her hair swooping over her eye, sort of in the three or four times that all the class shows up in Iggy Peck Architect? And I'm like, why is this kid like, ooh? And I thought, oh, she's shy. What's her story? And so that's where Rosie Revere came from. And then Ada Twist came from looking when they're building the bridge in Iggy Peck and everybody's doing things. And she's standing at the side going, what's her deal? And I thought, that's the kid who's thinking, has got questions. Mm-hmm. She's the scientist. So that's the process. Then I write the stories, and David then builds more of this world based on the text. And then I, you know, we just sort of go through this loop, and that's the process of it. But we could have so easily just kind of gone on this little, like, nothing ever happening, because there's so many glorious books out there, as you well know. That never do get that traction.
Mm-hmm.
But the timing for Rosie Revere was, I don't even know how it happened, but it really was perfect. And it was at this moment when the Goldilocks toy company came out, which was all about girls in engineering, and they had like some weird kerfuffle about one of their videos early on, and it got a lot of press, and somehow, Rosie Revere got linked, and it was an Amazon thing, on the if you like this, you will like that. And when they had their weird thing with their video and it went viral, suddenly...
I own a Goldilocks thing for my kids.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
They're cool.
They're cool.
So that sort of drafted along, and suddenly Rosie got really popular. So that was kind of when it started. And I will also say, the other thing that happened was when Rosie... when I saw the first sketches of Rosie, because by then it was, my fourth or fifth book, always crickets, crickety, crickety, crickets, even though Iggy was like, nice crickets, a little bit louder all the time.
Slightly louder crickets.
Slightly, not deafening, but a little bit louder. When I saw the art that David did, I thought, you know what, of all the things I'm ever gonna do, this is the book that I really want to make it. So I hired my daughter, who is actually here today.
Yay, Katie.
I hired her to go out and do market research and find who are the science bloggers, who are the women engineering bloggers, who are the women's empowerment.
Look
who?
At you.
Yeah, and she found these just troves of people who were not in the publishing realm, because when a publisher puts out a book, they typically goes to the... you know, these press people and those journals.
They've got their 10 things they send them to, and then they got to concentrate on the next book.
Exactly.
They don't have time to put a lot of effort into everything.
No, they don't have time, and they have X number of dollars and five
basically,
people.
Basically, the marketing plan is, what are you going to do?
And it is, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
And that's shocking when you first start out. But, you
it
know,
is.
If
it's
you,
a real shocker.
It's like, oh, okay.
Don't you have a lot of marketing dollars? It's, like, we got a lot of marketing dollars for these five already huge hits.
Five huge hits, yeah.
You do you.
Yeah. And, exactly. So, but what I found was that there were so many people who were engineers who were really, really hungry for... like their kids to know what they did.
Yeah.
They have a clue what that was about. Huh. And so then tapping into these other folks who had a connection to that story in some way, it just went boom. And then after that, they just kept going. And
that's awesome.
It was great.
It was great. Wow. So the moral of the story is make your children work for you for free.
Oh, no, I paid her.
And you will
I
have massive success. Oh, you paid her.
Oh,
oh
I
well,
paid
you
her.
Okay.
I paid
your children.
The moral of the story
and then
is
you will do well.
Okay. Pay your workers.
Pay your workers. Excellent. That's a much better lesson. I like that one better.
It is. Yeah.
I like that. And I also like that you now have apparently 17 books in total that you can do since there were 17 children in that room. So there you go. Yeah.
And that is always the question, will there be a book for every kid in the class?
Every situation, every job, what's in the news right now.
I think at the rate we're going, I figured out one time I'll be like 130 if that happens. I'm fine with that.
Great.
I could just turn 60, so I'm clearly middle-aged.
Yeah. Or you could just start cranking them out. Like
So, and that's the thing, I will do them, I think, until, while they're fun to do, while they're good, and I think they're good, but when they stop, then I'll be like, eh.
You don't want to like phone them in?
I
be
don't.
Like, I don't know, his name's Bob, and he's into lobbing things, I don't
Bob
know.
Slobbist.
Bob the Slob, there you go.
Slobbiest.
Next one.
A lobbyist.
Your kid.
That's it, huh?
Check, please.
I have to go, there's a book working here.
It's so funny because you began with Iggy Peck Architect, which I don't think anyone, like, I think a lot of publishers would sort of look at that and be like, oh, it's a picture book about architecture.
Buildings.
That's what the kids are looking for these days. But your publisher is Abrams.
Yes.
And Abrams, the thing and we were talking about this earlier, but the thing I like about Abrams is that they do take risks. They take a chance on things that are not the usual, like, no, unicorns and sparkles. That's what sells. And that they actually try things that are a little different, and it pays off for them.
It does.
In ways that other publishers should really probably pay a little more attention to, I would think. Yeah.
Yes. So Abrams Books for Young Readers is, I absolutely love and adore them, and I think we have a marvelous, marvelous partnership. So they began as the company that did the big art books. So in the day, like in the 40-ish sometime, they like those big heavy duty coffee table books, we call them now, but like of all the great artists, they do those, and that has always been their thing. So they have, first off, design, nobody does it better, and physical production, they bring that level of art and that level of quality to everything they do. But when I started working with them, the children's imprint was fairly new. And the editor was Susan Van Meter, who had just started So she had just started the children's imprint. But the thing they do that I absolutely think they do better than anyone is they understand a book for what it is. So for instance, Diary of a Wimpy Kid is one of their books. They didn't look at that and go, oh, I think that needs to be a little more hairy like Harry Potter, or oh, that needs to be a little bit more like whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Twilight.
We need some vampires up in here. Can the Wimpy Kids sparkle a little bit more, please? Because that would be really awesome. So they take whatever the thing is, and it can be wildly different than whatever it is, anything else, but they look at it and go, this is this thing, and they celebrate it for that. And in doing so, they find a way to sort of make cracks and find spaces that somebody needs that book, and it works.
It does. It's very nice. So when you were first pitching Iggy Peck to them, did they instantly go like, yes, that book, we want to get it? Or was there some back and forth? Were there things they wanted changed? Were there stuff you had to take out? Like, do you remember it all?
Gosh, yes.
It was a while ago, so.
It has been a while ago. In fact, this is this year's Iggy Peck's 15th birthday.
He can almost drive.
Well, thanks, Betsy. Yeah. I have never contemplated those kids driving, but.
Now he is.
Okay, now I've got another book I'm going to write. Yeah. That's how that happens. So,
Iggy Peck in a wreck. Sorry, I'm thinking of titles for it. I'm sorry. Now you've got me going. See, this is the problem when you start spitballing. You're like,
indeed.
So when you were pitching the book to Abrams, how did they? Yeah.
Yeah. So it happened that I was back in the day sending out my manuscripts willy-nilly to try to find an agent. I found an agent. He liked some other books. Didn't like Iggy.
Interesting.
Was not on his list anyway of the top ones that we're going to send places. So I went to a writers conference, an SCBWI, Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators conference, and Susan Van Meter, who was the editor at Abrams, she actually already had a different book that she was looking at, When Giants Come to Play, which ended up being my first book.
Yeah.
But there was an open mic night, and I got up and I read Iggy Peck, and she's like, that's the one I want. So the journey of being like having things come out and happen is so weird. It requires an enormous amount of work, as you know, and all of the things have to fall together. But sometimes it's just the weird, quirky turn of events, of meeting somebody and connecting with them. So she really loved Iggy and signed up two books at once, signed up When Giants Come to Play and Iggy Peck. Before we even had contracts, Susan left. That was with Dutton Books, which is a big house that I was like, oh my gosh, I mean, it was a marvelous publisher. And I was like, so want to be there. Before we did not even have contracts, and she moved to Abrams Books for Young Readers and said, the people at Dutton would love you to stay, but you can, if you want, love it if you would want to come with me. So I had this choice either, and Abrams was an unknown to me, but if I hadn't met her, I probably would have stayed with Dutton, and it would have been wonderful.
Dutton does great picture books.
They do great picture books, Dutton and it would have been wonderful. Yeah. But because I'd met her, and I really liked her so much, I went with her, and then she picked David for the illustrations, David drew that class, and then la-di-da-da-da-da.
Oh, that's great.
So you never know, the weird twists and the turns.
Yeah, no, especially in... So smart of you to go with the editor that you liked rather than the publishing house that you knew. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a smart way of going with it, I would say. Good advice.
Good. Yeah. It is. Because it's so much of it's about personality and about, do you guys see the world the same way? And just do you have a sense of humor that's going to go?
Yeah. And if your editor doesn't get your sense of humor, bye. Yeah.
That doesn't work.
That's not going to work out.
No.
So did you always see it as a series?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. Iggy Peck was just the one-off book that I wrote because my son, when he was a little tot, was the kid who built with everything. I mean, soup cans, mighty towers, and pots and pans, or jelly packets at tables and restaurants, which you don't get anymore, thanks COVID. I'm sure the waitresses hated that. Now I do understand that. At the time, I was like, isn't he cute? Look at the things he could build.
So and you can clean up.
And you can, so we'll just take all the jelly with us. That may have also happened once or twice. So it was just the one-off book. Mm-hmm. But then as the course of time, when looking at those illustrations David had done and knowing that I wasn't ever really going to write another book about Iggy, that's when we kind of started zoning in on who are the other children. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then that just kind of kept going. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. So... you know, you do these books, and I don't know, I suppose there's no possible way that in this series itself you've ever pitched a kid and they've been like, no, we don't want to do that. So the rest of them, I suppose, as you've gone, they've gone with each one pretty easily.
Yeah, and I originally had a couple of books under contract without knowing who they were, and that was really, really stressful. Oh. So it worked out. So that was
unknown child beast, some occupation.
Yes, child, unemployed child.
Blank to blank, unemployed child.
There's another book for you. The kid that just staying home, Joe. We're gonna go home and just doing nothing.
So they've pretty much gone, but I mean, as we say, these were not the first picture books you ever came up with. You've done many other picture books. Are there picture books that you've done that just haven't seen the light of day? Had this idea and you're like, this is gonna be the $1 million one, and then it just doesn't work out.
Yes, completely. So with these books, I now don't tell them what it's going to be. I write the book.
Oh, good idea.
And then I send it, and when I think it's done, and then go, ta-da! Mm-hmm. And so far, at least, they've been like, yay!
Good.
So far, we'll hopefully keep that going. But yes, have I had books that did not? I thought that the Dr. Ted series, which was a book with
Dr.
Simon
Ted.
Schuster.
With Pascal Lemaitre?
Pascal Lemaitre from Belgium. Yeah. I thought those books were going to be big hits. Mm-hmm. And they came out, and the crickets didn't even get out of bed. And partly that was because the big box stores didn't want anything to do with them, which is really weird.
That's really weird, actually. It was weird. Occupation books, too.
They were occupations.
It was occupation books, too. I'm beginning to see your theme.
I know. I don't even know how that happened. That's
very interesting.
Yes, jobs. Everyone needs jobs. I don't know why that happens.
Children, you need a job.
but the way the big box stores used to work, and it's changing now, but they, and it was Barnes & Noble and Borders, and they would pick one buyer would buy everything for the whole country.
Yeah.
And somehow those buyers thought that Dr. Ted needed to be punished. He was a bear that got up and did everything wrong, but his heart was so
Maybe they hated
good.
Bears.
Maybe they did.
They maybe just hated bears. It happens.
Bears.
Stephen Colbert was choosing all
the
books.
It was a threat down. Boom, from the start.
They are mindless killing machines, and you should not celebrate them in a picture book.
They should not. Yeah. But they're cute.
They're so cute. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Well, you've sort of lucked out with illustrators, too. I mean, you've had some really good illustrators over time. And we talked about this a little bit, but have you met David Roberts, the author of these books?
Yeah. I have made it. So in the way it typically works, when you write a picture book and you're not the illustrator, you write it, you send it to the editor. The editor picks with the art director, picks who's going to illustrate it. They send it to that person, and then any feedback, like they work together. And then occasionally they may have a question, and then the editor will talk to you and then send it back. So there's never direct communication with the illustrator. And that's really to protect the illustrator from authors who are going to be like, you know, it'd be really nice if Iggy Pearce, if his hair was like this and
I don't
he wore
see the
blue.
Teeth like
and,
that. The teeth.
Yeah. Are, so yeah. It, yeah. And I don't do that. I very much never put things like notes in the books unless there's a plot point that has to be done. Or occasionally I have a joke that I think's hilarious. Mm-hmm. But even then I tend to take those out or they get ignored. So,
okay.
But yeah, so that. I have had the luck of working with people, and I have now met, but I do make it, having said that, after the book is done, I always try to meet the illustrators.
Oh, good for you.
And get to know them. And I just made that my point to always try to get the know the people in marketing, know the people who are in publicity, and the editors and all of the art directors and things. Because it's such a collaborative world, doing books, and particularly picture books, and they're awesome, fun people.
Aww.
So I think I've met everybody but one.
Wow, which one have you met?
I did not meet Bill Mayer, who did Hyde and Sheep, which was one of my favorite books.
Yeah, but you've met, I'd say, like Dan Santat and David Roberts, and you've met Pascal?
I have met Pascal. Wow. He was in New York, and I he used to split his time between New York and Belgium, I made sure I went to New York one time and went out to dinner with him. He was wonderful.
Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah,
it's funny, I remember I once was interviewing Emily Jenkins, and kind of similar thing. At one point during the talk, she's like, I'm so excited. Three of my illustrators are in the audience right now, I've only met like one of them before. And this it just floored the audience. They were just like, what?
How can you
How could you not meet the person you've made the book with? But it's true. Yeah. Unless you're both at a conference at the same time and they happen to want you to both sign, it's not really going to happen all that.
No, it barely, rarely does. But at this point, you know, Dave and I have become great friends, and we'll just Skype with each other or FaceTime or whatever people do, whatever the modern children are doing with the technology.
Kids today.
We'll do that. Get off my lawn, I'm old. And we have become just great friends. And so we will toss out ideas and things and talk about possible things that now the editor is like the last one to know. I think she's okay with that,
Surprise!
Though. We don't always tell her, so don't tell her.
Well, you make good books, it kind of helps, so
it helps, yeah.
Yeah, it's not too bad. Do you have like a dream illustrator you'd like to work with one day?
Oh man, I do. Right. I want to work with Lauren Long.
Oh yeah.
Like, oh man, love Lauren Long.
Lauren Long just breathes it up.
I would love to work with the Fahn brothers, but I don't think
I don't think they do either.
All the people I really like.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I want to work with Bob Shea, but Bob Shea only does Bob Shea.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob Shea.
Not Bob Shea.
What's so good about Bob Shea, Bob Shea?
He's awesome. Bob Shea's awesome.
He's really good.
Check out his books, and you'll also want to work with him.
You will love his books.
Yeah. He's marvelous.
So you sort of alluded to this before, but I'm kind of curious about it. So, okay, you get this picture book, which you do not see as a series, and it goes out there, it's a huge hit, and they're like, okay, more Iggy Peck, obviously. Mm-hmm. If Iggy Peck is a hit, ipso facto, other Iggy would be a hit. So when you are asked to take a single thing and expand it into a series in some way, and you want to go in another direction, potentially, what do you do? What did you do?
I basically wrote the next thing like I saw it, and they liked it.
Okay, good. And so there wasn't a lot of like...
No, not at all. And it worked, because the book worked. With the picture books, to me, are easier than novels in a sense that when I'm doing one and I'm putting it together, it's kind of like building Legos, and when it clicks and it's like, boom, then I know it works. And Rosie was like that.
That's good.
Because I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what she was going to build. And over, like, it took me months to write that book. And at some point, I went to visit my aunt, who was a Rosie the Riveter. She worked at a munitions plant in World War II. And I was talking to her, and I thought, I want to do something to sort of say thank you to the Rosie the Riveters and all the people who saved the world, basically, back then in World War II. And so I thought, I'll put great, great Aunt Rose. She'll be a Rosie the Riveter. And once I knew that, that book came together, like, in a matter of days. And it was just snapped.
Yeah.
And when that happens, I just kind of know. This is the book I have. This is the best book it's going to be. We'll tweak it. There'll be changes. But I know it's solid.
Oh, that's good.
And so once that's what I send them, and it, I think they see it and they trust now the process enough, and they know David enough, and they can see what, you know, how we work together. So it, it's,
well, that's good
and awesome, and they're awesome besides. So.
Yeah, well, that does help, yeah, a little bit, yeah. Oh, I just this next question. I kind of love this one because I don't tend to ask this one, but you have such a great website.
Oh.
It's neat.
It's old,
clean. It's okay. I'm just very jealous of it. And you make a note on it. You don't do school and Skype visits.
I don't anymore.
And then you do this very nice thing where you offer instead, you offer up three other local authors who do school visits, which is just a really nice way of sort of paying it forward to another thing. Where'd you get the idea to do that?
Probably someone who before then, when I did a lot of school visits, had said, go ask Andrea, because she, my friend, up in Wisconsin, no, not Wisconsin, Michigan, oh my gosh, Lisa Wheeler, and some other writers, they would be like, oh, I'm too busy and I'm too
booked up. You said Wisconsin, I was like, Kevin Hankey?
Yeah,
like,
no. and so I thought, well, I'm going to do that too, because I got to the point where I just, it's too much. I don't have the time to do, because it takes a lot of time and energy, though it's great fun.
It's very fun, but I don't think a lot of people understand that for particularly children's book author and illustrators, if that is your sole source of income, then school visits are imperative. That's really a large chunk of the income that you do.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And there were very, very many years where income I would make from school visits vastly outweighed what I had earned from royalties from books.
Right.
And really, whenever Rosie and Ada took off, that sort of, that balance changed, and then also the writing demands changed, so I decided not to. But thank you for the website thing. That's old, and I just keep adding things to it. And I,
see, I hate my website. I don't like to touch it. I don't like to look at it. I like to pretend it doesn't exist, and then I look at it, and I'm like, ugh! So when I see a good one, I'm always like, oh, well done, well done. That's
my nightmare is that Weebly, which is the platform, will go away, and then I'll have to like actually do a real one.
Yeah. No, don't let that happen. So, all right. Well, we're almost at the end of our time, but I have a very important final question here. So this past year, at least, and maybe the past 2 years, I don't exactly remember. There was an Ada Twist scientist Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade balloon. Did you get to see it in person?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't get to hold the rope?
Did not.
I know that the Abrams people hold the ropes of the balloons. They've done it for Wimpy Kid, and I suspected they did it for yours as well.
I don't think they did, because it was a Netflix balloon. So one of the really groovy things...
It was a Netflix balloon?
Yeah, because there's a Netflix show. So, which is amazing.
I just didn't realize that, because Wimpy Kid was from the actual publishing company, so I assumed it was the same case. No.
So Netflix... has a series on Netflix, and it's called Ada Twist Scientist, and it's Iggy, Rosie, and Ada, and other kids come in, and they just dropped the second season, and I think there'll be more. I think there'll be more in the fall. There should be. At least they're in the process, as far as I know. But anyway, they made a balloon, and it was right when Omicron came around, and we was just like, do we go? Do we not go?
Right.
And just... decided not to. It was just too much. So I didn't, but I did watch it at home with donuts and my lovely family, and it was amazing.
How did you find out? Like, how does a person find out that they have a balloon?
One of the producers from the show called and said, okay, we're having a balloon. But then there are only like three tickets in the viewing stand available, and I said, Mark, you made this thing happen. You go take them.
Aww,
and so then we stayed home.
You're a freaking balloon.
I know. It was his too, though. So I hope that he'll come back next year. We'll see. Although Netflix has gotten a little weird lately, so we'll find out.
And I take it you don't help write those. Those are probably written by a staff of
those.
Writers.
I did not help write them. I was. I'm an executive producer.
Ooh.
I get to sing anytime I want. I want to be a producer, as my daughter will attest, I do frequently and badly. So I do review the scripts and then give feedback. Sometimes they're like, oh, yeah. And sometimes they're like, and it is what it is. But it's a great show. They have like so many great writers and such great talent as the voice. And it's great. Check it out.
That's great. That's good.
It's fun.
Yay. Oh, that's super fun.
No one saw that coming. So for the many years, but it was a thing planned. Then it was like, oh, but that's
very nice. That's the ultimate goal, the Netflix show. So there you go.
They're kind of ephemeral is what I realize now. It's like, here's here. And now look, there's a new series to watch.
Well, exactly. So. You ever binge your own show?
Have I binged?
Have you binged, like, have you just binged the
show? Oh, yeah. Right. Please. Oh, there are things that you can watch besides my show? No.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I binge them.
Very nice.
I do.
Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Do we have time for a couple of questions?
We can have time for questions, absolutely.
Does anyone have questions?
If you guys don't mind, I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like a question that we get fairly frequently here at the American Writers Museum is, what is one piece of advice you would give someone if they're an aspiring author? And so I don't know if you have any key pieces of advice that you would give to someone who's interested in trying to write a novel.
Yeah, so I would say my biggest piece of advice, if you want to write something, write for yourself. Write what amuses you, what cracks you up, what makes your brain and your heart just set on fire. Because if you write the thing and you write it with all of that love and beauty that you have in you, that for you, it will speak to somebody else and it will connect. So, I mean, yes, I guess I write for kids, but I actually kind of write for myself, and I write if it cracks me up. There's a kid out there, because I literally am like a fourth grader. You may not have noticed that. and it does. That's when you find some truth and you find some goodness. Also, if you are interested in writing for children, without question, join Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. That's an international group, fantastic, and for wherever you are in the process, from just beginning to think about it to being published for many decades, there's programs and people and community and help that is invaluable and makes a difference. Like Iggy Peck would been a much different story. I probably wouldn't be sitting here today if not for going to one of their conferences and doing an open mic. So the opportunities they give you to get out there.
That's always the advice I give, because a lot of people come to the library where I work and they're like, you know, I want to be a children's author. I'm like, first and things first, are you a member of SCBWI? And then the other one that, since I'm a librarian, I always say is like, read in the genre that you want to write in. So you want to write a picture book, read the new, don't read, I love Make Way for Ducklings. Do not read Make Way for Ducklings. Make Way for Ducklings is 5,000 pages long and they would not make it like that today. Just read what's new, what's coming out, what's good. Get recommendations from current like booksellers and librarians. Don't go to the wall in Barnes & Noble and read those picture books. They're fine, but they are chosen by one person for the nation, as we've said. And get the really good ones that are coming out. Someone can tell you what those are. They are out there. And don't be the person who's like, I am a pure white unblemished page and I will not be sullied by the thoughts of other authors or illustrators. No. Read as widely as you can and your stuff will be better as a result, and you will know what is actually selling these days. Because if you're going to write like a, you know, like tons of text on 40 pages and you say that's a picture book, is that a picture book?
Although having said that, then they'll have books like The Days the Crayons Quit, which was on the Times for like 4 years.
And that was a wonky little book.
And it's a wonky long little book.
It's a wonky long little book.
Yeah.
But it's an epistolary book because teachers like to assign books about letters and letter writing. That's why it did so well. Remember Dear Mrs. LaRue? Same thing.
That's true.
That's why it did so well.
Yeah. It's true.
Theories.
So, read, go to independent bookstores too. And this is the thing. And yay for you guys to bring in 57th Street Books, which I love. But independent bookstores are the reason there are great children's books. And without them being vibrant and supported by communities, they evaporate and blow away, and so do the great books, because they find those books, those quirky Iggies, and
they
love
them. Yeah,
they
put out the little Indie Next. Get a copy of Indie Next from a bookstore, and they'll have all the new stuff that is good and weird and coming out.
Yeah, because there's so many books published every year. I don't even know how many thousands. And
thousands and thousands and thousands.
Thousands. And for a book to find oxygen enough, it has to get some, be lifted up, and it has to be lifted up by marvelous people who know all the things. And those are booksellers and librarians, so yes. Yeah.
That is an amazing response. Thank you guys so much.
We like to talk.
We do. We like to talk about books.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Out on a beautiful Sunday day. And thank you.
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 Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, best-selling mystery writer Sarah Paretsky chats with booklist editor and book critic Donna Seaman, recorded live at the American Writers Festival. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.